Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. I've been trying to remember what it was like to be in my 20s the last couple of days. Remember back when I used to be cool, and back when I'd walk into a room full of my relatives and I'd see them all looking up towards me as I came through the door, and they would all resent me for my youth and for my being so cool and my being free. You know, I could just do anything I wanted, say anything that I wanted. Here they were. They were in their late 30s. They had kids. They were married. You know, they're having to toe the line. And I remember enjoying that feeling of resentment. And nowadays, I mean, you know, that's all gone. I come through the door and people look, and then they look down to see if there's anything on the floor I might trip over, you know. And sometimes people get up and hold out a hand to help me to a chair or something. It's painful. I had a cousin, my cousin Elmer, who had complete recall of his childhood and his youth. Of course, the 30s, 40s, and 50s were all just a blur to him, as they are to everybody. But his youth, he could remember. He could draw for you a picture of the fourth grade classroom and where everybody sat and the clothes that they wore and what was on the board and whose projects were pinned to the bulletin board. He could remember everything. He could remember the bus trip back from Ogilvy and the speech tournament where he won the first prize for oral interpretation doing Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven. He would remember these things, and it was a great handicap to Elmer because he was trying to earn a living. I mean, he was employed by the county. He was grading roads, and he would pull over in the grader as he was forming these pictures in his mind and remembering everything and who sat next to who and who said what to who. And on a midnight cold and dreary, as I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, as I nodded nearly napping, suddenly there came a rapping at my door. Well, he would remember all this, and then Mr. Hansen, who's on the county board, would come driving up and say, "Elmer, what are you doing?" Elmer would say, "I'm thinking." Mr. Hansen said, "We're not paying you to think. You're working for the county. Get busy. You're supposed to grade roads." And so he would. It was a handicap. He was just always kind of dreamy, remembering when we were kids and when we were young. There's medication for it. But he went to a therapist who said that the way to treat this overactive nostalgia, was to make your present life more interesting, more vivid. So he married a woman who had obsessive compulsive arsonist tendencies. And he got a job teaching driver ed in the schools. And he took up bobsledding and he took up parachuting. And any question I have about when I was young, I always go to my cousin Elmer. For example, this last week I was thinking about this, and I wanted to know the name of that girl who was Roger's sister. I couldn't remember Roger's sister's name. Roger was the cousin of, who was he the cousin of? Well, I should ask Elmer, I guess. But he was my Aunt Margaret's neighbor in Lake Wobegon. And so when I came back to Lake Wobegon, I was 21 years old, and I was kind of a disgrace. I had dropped out of college because I wanted to be a writer, which to people in Lake Wobegon was sort of like dropping out so you could lie on your back and look at the clouds. I mean, to them, writing was a form of loafing. And they said, "Well, if you're writing, show us what you've written," which I couldn't do because it was about them. So I had long hair, I had a beard, I was kind of a disgrace, and my Aunt Margaret made Roger sort of befriend me, and they put me on the Lutheran men's softball team, though I wasn't very good at softball, just as a favor, so I'd get to meet people. Boy, did I get to meet people. They put me in for one game, and they put me out in right field, because this was slow-pitch softball, and everyone was a pull hitter. A game against the Jack's Auto Repair team, the Lutheran men against Jack's Auto Repair. Jack's Auto Repair was a heathen. It was a bunch of heathen was who it was. These guys started drinking before batting practice. They carried cans of beer in holsters on their belt. I mean, they were blitzed. They were schnockered by the sixth inning. They could hardly see the ball, or they saw two of them. So it was kind of a disgrace that we were in a tie game with them, you see. They were flailing at the ball, and they were hitting doubles and triples, and we were taking a sober swing at the ball and hitting pop-ups to the pitcher. It was a tie game in the ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth, and there I was out in right field, and I was sort of aware that Roger's sister was sitting along the sidelines in the grass. She was wearing a white summer dress, and her hair was done up nicely, and the sun kind of glittered off her glasses. I was kind of watching her out of the corner of my eye and striking an outfielder pose, you know, sort of getting myself set with every pitch, though nothing was hit to me until the bottom of the ninth. The game tied 9-9, two on and two out, and this ball comes straight at me, and I had a bead on it. It was going into my glove, but I just glanced over to her, and it bounced off the heel of my glove, and the run scored, and the heathen leaping up in the air and screeching. They lifted up their shirts, and they butted bare bellies to each other. They poured beer on each other. They were rolling, big pile of them, the Christians walking silent, stone-faced toward the bench, insincere congratulations of the winner, and so forth. And nobody looked at me whatsoever. Nobody would say a word to me. I felt so bad. I went home. I sat in my room until the sun went down, and then I sat out on my parents' lawn. I was 21. I was a disgrace. I was a loser. I looked at this little sliver of moon in the sky and the stars, and I could see the moths beating at the screens, trying to get at the porch light. It was a lovely night in May. And then I heard her voice. She came and she sat near me. She sat over just about 5-6 feet away. Nothing suggestive. She just sat over there. She said, "It's amazing to think that 3 months ago we could drive onto the ice on the lake. And now it's almost time to go swimming," she said. I didn't say anything because I thought I should know her name, and I couldn't think of her name. And then she said, "I love this time in early summer before people get so used to sitting outdoors when it still is wonderful to them." Well, I didn't know if I was supposed to comment on that or what, so I just sat. And then she stood up after a while, and she said, "I'm Roger's sister." Well, I knew that. I couldn't think of her name, though. And then she said, "Well, I'll see you." And she walked away. Well, that night was kind of a turning point in my life, you see. Just that summer night. The next morning, a man who'd seen me play the game called up and offered me a job to be in the passion play out in the Black Hills of South Dakota. I already had a beard and long hair, and he offered me a role as one of the apostles at a pretty good rate of pay. So he gave me a ride out to South Dakota, and on the way out there, he explained what an important part the role of Judas Iscariot is. How really the impact of the passion depends on Judas, and he was sure that I could do this really well. Well, I threw myself into it. I did the best I could, and it was kind of fun when you come out on stage and people know who you are, and there's this kind of ripple of horror. And then when you kiss Jesus on the cheek and people kind of recoil and you betray him. And then when I hung myself, it was so good. They put this after the crucifixion, and it was people really, they would have given me a standing ovation, but I was Judas, so they couldn't. But I did a great show. We did two shows a day. We did three shows on Saturdays and Sundays. And then a guy saw me in the show, and he offered me a job in radio. I offered Yankton, South Dakota. I did an early morning show and doing, you know, commercials for farm products, farm implements, and garden tools, Minneapolis brand garden tools and talking about hoes and what wonderful things they are and using them and how, you know, a well-made hoe and how it feels in your hand and so forth. And I really, how important hoeing is. And from that, I got this job, which is, you know, one of the best jobs in radio. But I couldn't remember the name of this girl who made such a difference in my life. I called up Elmer. He said, Beatrice, what happened to her? I said, well, she married Chuck, who was an auto mechanic, and they got a matchbook cover that said, earn $28,000 in your spare time, and she sent for it. And, of course, the way you earn that kind of money is through rental income. So they bought a couple of lake cabins, and they became landlords and then rented them out to young people, which is just a life of misery. Taking in tenants, and without exception, they're always hard drinkers, and they're hard on your property, and they wind up putting a fist through the wall, and they never pay their rent on time, and then they just stop paying rent, and it's hard to get them thrown out. You have to go to court. You have to go to the sheriff. It's just a big pain, and finally, they just leave in the middle of the night, and they leave this wreckage behind them, and you go in and you fix it, and you interrogate the next applicants to be renters, and they're devout Baptists, and they're book readers, and they subscribe to good magazines, but once they get in there, they do the same thing. They drink, they carouse, they play loud music, they wreck your property. It just takes away all of your faith in human beings to be a landlord. But there they were. They owned these two cabins. It was misery for them. He was unhappy. Their marriage was unhappy. He worked nights as a mechanic, listening to jazz on the radio. There's a jazz show that comes from the Club Duke up north of there, up on Lake Hammond, and he would listen to the music and late at night. He was one of the best auto mechanics, but she had a rough life, She joined a group of Pentecostal Lutherans, Lutheran Pentecostals, who gave her some hope, I guess. Lutheran Pentecostals who speak in tongues, but they speak slowly in hopes that you might understand it. They're charismatic, but they're not showy about it. You know, they lay hands on people, but they apologize for it after. I haven't seen her, Beatrice, ever since. I just remember her for that night when my life changed, when she sat on the grass and she said, I love this time early in summer when people aren't so used to sitting outdoors, when it is still wonderful for them. It sure is still wonderful for me, and I hope it's still wonderful for her. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.